This podcast is brought to you by St. Joseph's Episcopal Church in Boynton Beach, Florida, in the United States of America. You can find us at stjoesweb.org. Come visit us when you are in town.
For those of you I haven't met, I'm Pastor Lynn Jones. I am the new chaplain at the school. And I have to say, I just heard that our youth have been up almost all night. So are you impressed that they are in church? I'm impressed. You know, if they were adults, they'd probably stay home this morning and sleep in. Yeah? I'm always tempted when it rains. And I also told, I have a little church in Deerfield, I also told them, could we just do every Sunday midnight mass? I'm really not a morning person. Can we just do midnight mass every Sunday? And they won't let me do it. See, that's how much power a priest has. Nope, you can't do that. Jesus says in today's gospel, who do you say that I am? Who do you say that I am? It's a very personal question. And it matters. It sounds simple. Sounds really simple, but it's not easy. It's simple, but not easy. You know, if we love somebody, I mean, really love them a lot. You know, you've heard, I know, that if you hold on to them really tight, you're going to lose them. Anybody heard that? Anybody done it in their lives? You just see something you want so much, so you just hold, and not let go. Well, if we do that to one another, we're not allowing the other person to be who they are. Or if we allow somebody to do that to us, we're not allowing ourselves to be who we are. So if we don't know who we are, or if we haven't ever asked the question, how on earth can we begin to understand who Jesus is? And not just something that somebody teaches us. I had a guy say to me once, well, Jesus says this and this, and Jesus would do so and so and so and so, and he had Jesus like all wrapped up like he was a character in a play. And I said, how do you know that? Well, I've heard it preached from in sermons. I've heard people tell me that from my parents. He said, in fact, everybody in my church, everybody in my family is an Episcopal priest. And in fact, my family founded the Virginia Theological Seminary, and they know. Well, of course, I'm going to take umbrage with that because I went to the General Seminary, the first seminary, the most traditional seminary in New York City. So I'm not, Virginia was our arch rival. We played them in football every year. Something you don't know about seminaries, right? Now, General would allow the women to be on the team. So we had women and men, but not Virginia. They just had these big, burly guys who would try to kill us. Thus, the Church of God lives on. It's important to know who we are, my brothers and sisters. Now, I am the brand new chaplain at St. Joseph's School, and the children are teaching me how to be a chaplain. I've been a parish priest for long time. And I've been a chaplain for people who are suffering from the disease of addiction, and I learned a lot from those folks. And I expect I will be learning a lot from the children at our school. You know, one precious thing about children is they're asking that question, who am I? And they're discovering it. And what a unique and wonderful gift to be a part of that journey, part of their journey, their pilgrimage, to understand their own identity. I had a vacation Bible school at my little church in Deerfield this summer, and one of the things I asked the children, first of all, I gave, you know, Deacon Mary. She's helping me at St. Mary's Deerfield. I told Deacon Mary, can you get the adults for me? I do them every year, and I want to be with the children because I'm giving them the responsibility to start teaching me how to be a kids chaplain. So she agreed to that. Well, I asked the kids, I said, so why are you here? Do you come because your parents are making you? Or do you really want to know about Jesus? Do you want to know who Jesus is? Do you want to follow him? And they thought about it for a while. And praise be to God, they said, yes, we do. I said, not because your parents told you, right or wrong. Tell me, you tell me. Because somebody can tell us something till they're blue in the face, but we still have this willfulness, don't we? It's kind of like what Jesus was saying when he says, when you set your mind on doing this thing, you have to let it go. That way you get it back. People, it's about relationships. If we love somebody and we try to wrap them up in cotton batting to keep them safe, or we try to chain them to us with all different kinds of chains that we can use, only let's be honest, we all know each other's buttons, right? I can still hear this morning somebody was quoting their mother, and I said, yeah, I can hear my mother saying that to me too, right in the back of my head here. We have to let people go, and if they stay, then that's a solid good love. But it has to be a choice they make, and the same is true as of us. So if you're trying to just save your life, save your life, save your life, Jesus says, you're going to lose it. It's giving it up. It's letting it go. It's having that freedom and that trust that comes in our relationship with him that allows us to do that, to let it go. Then we get it back. Then we get back more than we can ever imagine or ask for, because this relationship is so filled with love, with healing, with serenity, with peace. But it's never forced on us. Again, because love isn't forced, is it? I think that's what Jesus is saying here. It's so simple, but it really isn't easy because we complicate things. When you were a kid, did you ever sit down and write your name and address and then go on to say the country you were in? You all know I was born and raised here in Boynton Beach, Florida, and I left and went other places, but here I am, back home again. And as a kid, I would write down, I lived on a farm, my dad was a farmer, so I'd write down the name of the farm and where we were located and the state and the city and the country and then the universe, the world, the planet, and then the universe, the cosmos, and I would just keep going as big as I could think. Yeah, anybody ever do that besides me? Never. One guy admitted after the 7:45 service that, yeah, he did it. But nobody would raise their hand. So am I that peculiar? I think it's a way for a kid. Oh, I see a hand back there. Thank you for your honesty. I think it's a way for a kid to locate themselves and to start building on their identity. This is who I am. My parents are so-and-so. We live here. This is my aunt. This is my uncle. They have had a lot of influence on us because, you know, they're priests in the Episcopal Church, or they're crazy, or they're loving, or they're helping us all the time, or they come to visit and we can't wait till they go home. We have influence on each other, don't we? Relationship is what it's about. That's where we meet each other as human beings. That question, who do you say that I am, has a lot of importance for us. Because to follow him, it's so basic, simple again, but not easy. We have to start with knowing ourselves. We have to start with saying, who am I? I went on a retreat once led by Martin Smith, who is a priest in the Episcopal Church. He used to be a brother in the Anglican Order of Monks called the Society of St. John the Evangelist. And his whole retreat, we had one thing we had to answer and own and articulate. For a whole week we worked on this. Simple, not easy. And the question was, what do I need from Jesus right now? What do I need? What do I need from Jesus right now? Some of you know that I was a pastor at the Hanley Center, so I worked with people in recovery. We had an amazing woman there once, and if you've heard this story before, I apologize because I tell it all the time. She was very articulate. She said when she was a little girl, she was the perfect little girl. because her parents wanted her to be, and she wanted to please them. She said she grew up and she went to college and she met the man who would become her husband, so she became the perfect girlfriend. Perfect. The girlfriend he expected and needed and wanted her to be. And then she married him and she became his perfect wife. And she said it was like putting on a mask. She was the perfect little daughter. She was the perfect girlfriend. She was the perfect wife. Then she became a mother, and she became the perfect mother. By the time she got into treatment, she had been drinking for 30 years. And her question became, and she told this story to a group of women, and some of them were weeping because they recognized themselves. And she said, "Here, I'm sober for the first time in a long time, and I have taken off every mask. I have taken off every mask." And she said, "I don't know who I am. I've played so many different roles. The masks are gone. I don't know who I am." It was an amazing ministry because we got to experience miracles. You know, that's a frightening place to be, a risky place to be. I don't know who I am. But she became determined that she wanted to know, and she became very open and willing to go on this pilgrimage of discovering herself and beginning to love herself. And I saw a miracle happen with that woman, because she was delightful, and she was intelligent, and she had dreams. And God had created her different from every other person on this planet, man or woman. She was unique. There will never be another woman like her. My brothers and sisters, that is true of each one of us. That is true of each one of us. Isaiah talks about the fact that he's a teacher, and I love when he says, "And I'm listening." See, he's listening. I try to do that. I think when you read the Gospels, you see that's what Jesus does. He meets people where they are. If we can't listen to one another, how do we know where we're coming from? How do we know anything? But you see, we have to listen to ourselves, too. And if we've been tamping down our voice, or somebody else has been blocking it out or silencing us, it's hard to know who we are. Remember, Jesus just, and we heard it, we didn't hear it in the service, we heard it in the last service, when Jesus gave the summary of the law. He says, love others, but what's the second half of that? As you love. Say it loud. I'm a priest that really likes congregational participation. I don't like to preach alone. Yes, love others as you love yourself. How many here love themselves? Well, some of you aren't too embarrassed to put up your arm. I love myself. That's a good thing. Okay, youth, you're half asleep. Did you hear the question? Do you love yourself? Okay, all right. I won't bother you anymore. So go ahead and snooze. James talks about the fact, he says, you don't want to be a teacher. You don't want to be a teacher because we're held to a higher standard, teachers are. And then he goes into a whole diatribe about gossip. Have you ever heard anybody preach on gossip before? Yeah, I have too, a lot. It seems to be part of the human condition. And why do we do that? I'll tell you, I went to school with a woman in seminary who, and this is a terrible reputation for a priest to get, and she was actually not ordained for other reasons, but her diocese said, no, we're not ordaining you. She was very disappointed. But it was probably a good thing, I got to tell you. In seminary, she had the reputation, students would say to each other, okay, if you want the whole community to know something, the whole block, we were on a city block in New York City, if you want the whole community to know something, then you tell this woman and you tell her it's a secret. And in 10 minutes, everybody will know. It's magic. Again, that's not a reputation that a priest wants, right? It's not a reputation I don't think any of us want. But priests are often called to hold confidences. We're always talking about, oh, you can tell me this under the stole. We're called to hold confidences. We don't talk a lot in the Episcopal Church about witnessing or testimony. Of course, I said that at 7:45, and I said, if I right now asked anybody to come up and give their testimony and witness for us, would any of you do it? Now, you'd think 20 Episcopalians at 7:45 in the morning would be snoozing. One woman said, I'll do it. And I couldn't let her, because we would have still been here, right? We don't talk about it a lot in the Episcopal Church, but we do it all the time. Because, my brothers and sisters, everything we do, the way we treat people, the things that are most important to us in our lives, the way we talk to people, the way we gossip or not gossip, the way we live, we're constantly witnessing as to what we hold dearest. We're constantly witnessing to our identity, to who we are. Now, sometimes we're not really conscious of it. We don't think of it in that way. I often quote Stephen Sondheim simply because I love him and I think he's a genius. But in his musical, Into the Woods, there's a very eerie, lovely, wonderful song called Children Will Listen. And it says, the lyrics go, careful the things you say. Children will listen. Careful the things you do. Children will learn. I'm here to tell you, it's not just children, it's everybody. Every person you come into contact is going to get an impression from you if you've just told them, you know, they're not worth the dirt you're standing on, or if you've just affirmed them. Boy, I really liked the way you handled that situation. Or I know that was difficult for you. I'm here to help. We're always witnessing. We're always witnessing. Isn't it a good idea to be aware of it? Again, this is all really simple, but it's never, ever easy. At least I don't find it to be easy in my life. Isn't it better to be conscious of who we are and the effect that our words and our actions are having on others and what they are saying about our identity? That's one thing to look at when we're looking at who am I? Who is Jesus? What do we have to do with each other? It starts right here at home. Who am I? Some of you know I was at a retreat at the start of school. I missed the first day of school. What kind of a chaplain is that? I'm really good with boundaries, and I'm really good with spiritual care usually. So I went off on this retreat, a Richard Rohr retreat, and if any of you know or have experienced Richard Rohr, have read his books or listened to him speak, you know, that man can bring my blood pressure right down. I have all of his CDs, and I put them in the car when I need it. It comes right down. He's an enormously spiritual man. He's a Franciscan priest, so his orientation is Christian, but he's just as likely to quote the Dalai Lama or Buddha or Mary Oliver, a poet, as he is to quote Jesus. He's an amazing man who sees connections, who sees truths everywhere. Well, at this conference, this retreat, he had invited this nun named Sister Elia Delio, which I'd never heard of her. Has anybody heard of Elia Delio? She's a quantum physicist, and she gave a few lectures, a few talks. And I will admit to you that I was an English lit major before law school and before seminary. I don't know a whole lot, except how to balance my checkbook. But I'm not into quantum physics. So about 9/10 of what she said went right over my head. And I was, you know, you got to get something out of this. That's what I'm teaching the kids. You know, when you come to sacred studies, we're letting that go. We're just going to be in the presence of God. We're going to let Jesus talk to us. We're going to let Jesus teach us who we are. But I was, you know, of course not obeying that, and I was getting all frantic. And finally I started to relax, and her words were coming over me, and her slides were washing over me, and all of a sudden it hit me that what she was talking about was that scientists are discovering anew and over and in ways that they haven't before in quantum physics and in chaos theory, about the relationships in the cosmos and how everything affects everything else. And she said, your hatred could kill a star. Now, that, I don't know about you, but that really touches me. Even our negative thoughts have an influence somewhere, and we don't have any control over that. Well, a few days after I heard Elia speak, I was annoyed at somebody, and I didn't tell them to their face because I was being very circumspect, but I was thinking some harsh stuff. And all of a sudden, I could hear Elia's voice again, and I thought, and what effect are you having, Lynn, on a star in the cosmos with this negative stuff? You know, if we think about it that way, isn't it easier to stop gossiping? Isn't it easier to let go some of that negativity? We might ask in our prayers this week, who are you, Jesus? Who am I? Can you teach me? Remember, Jesus in the Gospel of John said, I don't call you servants any longer, I call you friends. I chose you. I chose you. What does it mean, my brothers and sisters, to be chosen by Jesus? What does it mean to be his friend? We witness all the time about who we are and what we believe, our identity. To be conscious of that. And even if you're in a place like the woman I told you about was, where she said, I don't really know who I am, that's not a bad thing. When we decide to follow our Lord, we take on a lot of riskiness. Because when we fall in love, we don't have any control anymore, do we? You don't know what's going to happen. But it's a choice we make. Do I want to love this guy? Do I want to love Jesus? Do I want to be open to the Holy Spirit and give up control and let go and let God? So in your prayer life this week, I encourage you to reflect on who am I? Where am I falling into negative stuff? Because Jesus is all about choice, and he's about love and serenity and peacefulness and becoming every day more and more of the unique and amazing, lovable human beings that he created us to be. Who do you say that I am? Take it with you. Amen.